Thank you for being a Bump2 subscriber. In this exclusive podcast, Rana and I explore fear, caregiving, insurance insanities, and the strength that can come from a bump in the road. Have you, I think about this fear, this character sitting next to you, and oh no, that's a great way to describe it. And I wonder, obviously, to some extent can serve a purpose, but has it also taught you perhaps to distance yourself from your thoughts and to watch your thoughts and realize that, okay, I've run through this worst case scenario, and can you really set it aside, at least for a while?
I can. If I welcome it in, and my husband will tell you, I mean, when I welcome it in, you know, I am sitting on the couch and I am immobile and I am running through my brain every scenario and everything that I can think of. And after I get through it, I think it's important. I had to learn how to pull myself out of it. I think that it can be very overwhelming if you can't pull yourself out of that fear. And again, I had a therapist that was helping me get to the other side of it. But I can do that now, and I can allow myself to feel every emotion that I have to feel. And then I'm exhausted afterwards. But then, yes, I have a little bit of peace of, okay, we're going to see what happens here. You know, Alex was diagnosed with mono his first semester of college. We didn't know that at first. We were on a FaceTime call with him and he didn't seem right. He was pale and he was evasive in my questions. He said he was tired. I cried all night after we hung up, and my husband woke up the next morning and said, "You got to go. Just go." And I flew up there, and my son had a enlarged lymph node the size of a sweet potato.
Oh my gosh.
He didn't know. And we ended up back in the hospital in Chicago for a little bit. And luckily, my brother lives 15 minutes from campus, and so I was able to be there. But we had a few days. I was called his doctors in Boston, and she said to me, the next 3 days are critical, and you are going to have your phone on you, and you are going to be talking to me every day, multiple times a day. And we did it. It was very, very, very difficult. But that was a worst case scenario. And I had already gone through, not mono necessarily, but what happens if he gets sick? What do I do? And so it was kind of a practice run, I feel like, going through it in my brain. And then when it happened, I was in work mode, is the best way to describe it. Get in that zone of, you make the phone calls, you start calling the advisor, you start talking, you know, making calls to school, trying to figure out what we're going to do. And every 2 hours we were making adjustments to his medication, and he was having severe chest pains, which ended up back in the hospital, and we needed to be in the hospital for that bit of time to make sure he was okay. And then luckily he was, and we came out on the other side.
How do you balance the need to give a young adult autonomy with a situation like this?
It's a lot of communication. It's a lot of trust that has to be built. I think there are times when he doesn't want to tell me what he's feeling, especially in the beginning of his diagnosis. He's my son that powers through, always has. He would power through with a headache, taking finals, not taking Advil, right? He powers through a hurt leg in a track meet. Powers through. And he had to learn to stop and talk to me so that I could help him. In the first 6 months, that was very difficult for both of us. There were lots of raised voices, lots of hard conversations. But I think sitting him down when he knew he wanted to go away for college was very honest. If you do not communicate with me, if we do not have open lines of communication, if you don't tell me how you are feeling, you are coming home. As easy as that. But I think also on the flip side, it was to say to him, I'm proud of you for trying this. Go do it. And if it doesn't work out and you don't like it, come on home. And that's okay too. But you have to have those hard talks and you have to have the communication. And luckily, Alex was mature enough. I think he had to be. I think this made him, especially with the couple of incidents that he had before he left. He knew how important it was to take his medication and to not black out at the wheel, and that he was scared too. And we needed that respect. And that's what we have now, is respect. When he's down and I knew I couldn't help him, you know, my husband and I sat him down and said, there are other people for you to talk to. It's not just us and it's not just your doctor. You know, I think you maybe need to talk to a psychiatrist, and this has changed your world, and that's okay. And it took him some time, but then he reached out and said, yeah, I think I need to talk to somebody. And that was huge for us too.
This has impacted everybody in your family. How are the other kids handling it?
It's hard. I think sometimes they see their brother as just their annoying brother. And he gets a lot more of my attention, obviously. And there's things that we can't do because of Alex. And I think that's hard on them. But also, they're very close, the three boys. And we were in the hospital for a long time, and they knew it. They knew it was scary. They knew it was hard. We sit around the table and they prick their fingers and check their blood sugar. We all do every now and then, just because. I think there are times when they just want their brother back, the way that he was, which we all do. But then I think there's also times when I think because I'm around more and I've slowed down, that maybe the other two are getting a little bit more of me than they've had before. And the pressure that a lot of times parents put on their kids in these high school years, I've reevaluated, and I just want them to be happy, you know, and they have to make some of their decisions on their own. I can't make them do their homework. I can't do this or that. And I think they're feeling a little bit more power in that way, that they're making some of their decisions too, and finding out a little bit who they are maybe earlier than maybe some of their peers.
One of the lessons that's come out of this, it seems, is this is slowing down and being present. Mm-hmm. What other lessons would you pass along?
I think as a caretaker, try to listen to your own body and take care of yourself, because sometimes you go 100 miles an hour for the person that you're trying to help and that you love, and that you don't do it for yourself. And I had to learn that the hard way, and realize that taking care of yourself is just as important as taking care of them, because they need you. And I think that, you know, having open communication with your kids about hard stuff is very important. And my sons were young when Alex was first diagnosed, but they could handle it. And sometimes we forget that kids can handle hard stuff. And as long as you're there to support them and give them the tools that they need, or help support outside of yourself and your spouse, and get them other help if they need it, I think that's really important. And I think trust, learning to trust. For me, I love the days when my son goes off fishing with my husband because I get to relax and my husband takes over. And I trust that. And I trust my son. And he has bad days. It's not because he did anything wrong. It's not because he messed up in some way. He just has bad days. And I trust that. And that's hard. I like to be in control of things. And it's hard to let go of that sometimes. But I've learned that it makes all of us better. And our little, we call it our little favorite five, our group of five of us. It's made all of us a little stronger.
Control is such an interesting aspect of this. I had an experience once. I didn't think I was really controlling, but I was flying with a friend of mine, and some people had died in this plane, and this particular type of plane. And he said, "I know what went wrong." And it's like, it's okay. I've read the accident report. I know what went wrong too. We don't have to recreate this to show that we can get out of this. But I just was feeling so sick in that airplane, and I never get air sick. And finally, the gentleman I was flying with turned to me and he said, "Why don't you take the stick? You're flying." Boom, my nausea went away. Well, I was in control. And it was a real eye-opener for me in terms of what my desire for control that I didn't even recognize was doing to me physically.
Yeah, it's powerful. And I think that even if you don't see yourself as someone who, I mean, I'm a self-proclaimed control freak. So if you don't see yourself as a control freak, I think there are things like an illness that can put you into a tailspin. There's so much about this that we cannot control. I cannot control the weather and how it affects his blood sugar. I cannot control his stress. I can try to control the atmosphere, the environment, but if he is stressed about something, I cannot control that. He cannot control it sometimes. And I went through this whole time period, and truly only about a few months ago, where this control thing was really getting to me. And I don't know if it was because of COVID and we were on lockdown and sons were, you know, we had to be a little bit more more guarded than so many just because of Alex. And then I wasn't sleeping. I couldn't get it out of my head that I really don't have any control over any of this, COVID or anything else, or the flu or a virus or anything. And I call it, I got godsmacked is what I call it. And suddenly this phrase pops into my head and it's, "Grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot control." And I know that serenity prayer. I prayed it a lot when Alex was first sick. I kind of forgot it. And all of a sudden, I had this powerful feeling of, you know what you can't control. And that's powerful. Knowing what you can't control is powerful. If you slow down enough to think about, okay, what can I control and what I cannot control? And all of a sudden, I had this peaceful feeling of, okay, yes, there are things that I cannot control. I know what those are, though, for the most part. All of a sudden now, and I'm working on accepting all of this. I will say I have not figured this out by any means, but I do think there is power in knowing what you can't control, and then trying to accept that and work through it. And I work through that on a regular basis. But it's hard. It's a hard realization, but I think if you can get there and you can start thinking about those things that are beyond your control, that maybe you'll start feeling a little bit of power and then control, I guess, again.
And then the flip side of that is recognizing what you do control. Mm-hmm. And it may not be much, but it can have a lot of power.
Yeah, I think, for us, when I really thought about what I control and what I'm doing for my son, is that giving him a safe, loving environment for him to heal and take the time that he needs to feel better about himself and his diseases. I think most people with type 1 diabetes would agree at year 3 is a hard year. I think the kids are kind of, they're rock stars. They're all rock stars all the time. And this is a 24/7 disease that they have to manage, but you kind of, you're doing it and you're into the tech that you wear and how your body's working and all that. And then sometimes you're just like, this is really it, like forever. I have to keep doing this, forever. And I realized that what I can control for him is being here and having a safe place for him for those days where he just wants to be on the couch, those days that he wants to stay up until 3 o'clock in the morning playing with one of his good friends in Denver on a video game and hanging out like normal and then sleeping in, until noon and giving him that space and realizing that, yes, he's taking time off of college. He's not going to do college like his peers. It's going to be different for him. And that's okay. He's got to figure out his path. And his path might be different than my path. But having that safe and loving environment and for him to know, and he does know now for sure, I have his back. He hears me yelling at the insurance companies. He hears me juggling doctors, especially when they forget to send blood work in when we've been doing fasting blood work and, he's nauseous and they forget to send orders. And I'm yelling and I'm mama bear. And he's almost 21 years old. And I told him the other day as I'm fighting different insurance companies on different claims. And I said, I will do this for you for the rest of your life. I will do this. Unless you marry some wonderful woman who wants to do this, you take ownership of it. It's hard and it's complicated. And I am here and I can control this for you. I can make you not have to worry about this part so that you can focus on healing and feeling better for yourself. And that is huge for me. I feel I don't have to get paid. I don't, that it fills me up. It gives me a purpose to be able to help him in that way. It makes me very proud of the fact that I'm able to be home for him. And on the good days, I'm gardening and cooking and trying to enjoy quiet. On those days where he needs me, I am there. And I'm proud of that.
The insurance must be a nightmare.
Yeah, it's awful. I can't even... Going from just renewing insurance to the different doctors that are on the insurance to then fighting with the pharmacy that tells me he only gets one vial of insulin at a time, I can't. And then having to shell out money out of pocket because the insurance wouldn't allow more insulin and I'm paying $465 for a vial of fluid that keeps him alive. Not right. Just not right. No, that could be a whole other conversation. It infuriates me. Getting the hydrocortisone that he needs to take, the steroids that he needs to take every day for the Addison's disease. And, do you really need 250 pills? Yeah, I do. And I need them today. So figure out where they are. This shouldn't be anything new. You've been my pharmacy this whole time. That part hasn't changed. Or giving me a generic. I can't have that generic. I need the real stuff. It's just every 2 weeks, it is fights and one insurance paying one thing and then a hospital stay and I'm still fighting claims from 2019. So,
I believe it. And your husband undoubtedly has good insurance through his job.
Yes,
you're very fortunate.
Thankfully, I really at some point in my life hope that I can help those that don't have good insurance. There's got to be a way that we can help people so that they can manage this. It is such a game, and it's so hard to understand. If I was working two jobs and not on good insurance and just trying to keep my son alive, I don't know what I would do. The parents who are struggling to make ends meet to get and get the insulin that they need for their kids, it's mind-boggling. I hope at some point I can give back in some way to help figure out whether it's a nonprofit or an entity where insulin dependency is, it's what type 1s need to live. It's not a type 2 diabetic that, you know, can maybe make some adjustments along the way. I mean, these people, adults and kids that have type 1, his normal prescription is 9 vials of insulin. If I had to pay out of pocket for that every month, I couldn't.
No, it's outrageous. I know. I have to get individual insurance, and I don't qualify for any financial support. I pay almost $1,000 a month. I have a $7,600 deductible. That means if I need to use my insurance, it costs me $20,000.
No, it's not.
This is not affordable.
It's not right. It's just not right. I don't know how to fix it. I wish I think everybody kind of says that, but there's got to be something better than what we're doing.
I think we need a reset. That this is another conversation we should have. We need a massive medical reset.
We do for sure.
Oh, I'm just astonished at how things happen out of the blue. And how they change our life paths. And it would be really interesting to get together in 5 years or 10 years mm-hmm. and kind of look back at it all and glean whatever wisdom there is to be gleaned from the situation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Although I hope that if you do hit your bump in the road, that you're able to catch your breath for a minute and slow down. To think about it. And I'm not one of those people that thinks that everything happens in life for a reason. Can't tell me that with my son. You really can't. Can't tell me that God had a plan for this either. I'm not buying that either. Maybe one day I will, but not right now. But I do think it happened. We've accepted that. And we're able to catch our breath to look around to say, we're going to make the best of this that we can. And we're going to make the best of this day that we can. It is a day by day kind of thing. It's not this year. It's not this week. If you hit a bump and you hit a bump where, I mean, you get the sucker punch in the gut and your forehead's on the ground and you're just thinking, how in the world am I going to get through this? Breathe and take a breath and try to slow your brain down long enough to think, okay, we can get through this. We will get through this. And we're just going to keep taking it day by day. That's what you do.
Thank you for joining us today. I hope you found something in today's podcast that inspires you along your own life's path. Because sometimes a bump in the road is actually a portal into a more conscious and meaningful life. You can subscribe to our free podcast at www.bumpintheroad.us or become a premium member to hear the full conversation. Just go to www.bumpintheroad.us for more information and to sign up.